The following program is a presentation of the FlyPod New Media Network, www.theflypod.com.
From Studio 7, I am your host, Alex Parnute. Regardless of how you are listening, we're glad to have you joining us. Take time to browse around our media website, theflypod.com. We have a nationwide network of show hosts. We podcast a wide variety of programs daily to thousands of small communities across the United States, Puerto Rico, and the Virgin Islands. When it comes to media, we are what's next. My guest today is Jim Jung, an entrepreneur involved in the future of transportation in America. I'm not talking beam me up, Scotty, as in Star Trek, but a more realistic approach down to earth called magnetic levitation, or as I will refer to it, maglev. I'm sure all of us have played with magnets and tried to put two south or north poles together. Doesn't work. That, in a very basic explanation, is what magnetic levitation is all about. But I'm not the expert here. So with that, let me welcome to the microphone, Jim Jung. Jim, welcome to Studio 7 and this segment of America Speaks Out.
Thank you, Alex. Certainly my pleasure to be here today.
Jim, I think the first question to bring to our listeners is a short but concise explanation of what this magnetic levitation, or maglev, is all about.
The project is the Hydrogen Superhighway Maglev System. The infrastructure is a fully integrated solar-powered hydrogen production and distribution system. The infrastructure supports the maglev multimodal transportation system and a collection of vital municipal utilities bundled into a conduit cluster, things like water, sewer, fiber optics, electrons, vapor, and liquid abilities within this conduit system. And the maglev is an on-demand transportation system, which is multimodal. It runs above grade. In other words, it doesn't run on the ground. It's on stanchion poles running on an average about 35 feet in the air above bridges, above certain wires. The three transport vehicle types carry people with their vehicles, or freight. These are independent transport vehicles that each have an automated suspension system that also mitigates G-forces, so the vehicles provide as smooth a ride as possible.
Now, you're talking about three vehicles. Are you saying that one construct is going to be able to take care of a people vehicle and then another vehicle for product and moving things around from point A to point B, and also another product where you would just kind of, I guess, pull your car into a little entity and park it, lock it, and then go do other stuff, and it would be delivered for you someplace else?
Well, that's exactly correct, but it goes just a little bit further. The vehicle that simply handles people is just people going on, and they can go from place to place. They may go a long distance, or they may express all the way across the country. When people can also go with their vehicle, they can certainly put their vehicle on a transport, but they can even go with their vehicle so when they get off on the other end, they can drive their vehicle off. And the third transport type will be for freight. And freight can be freestanding freight that gets tied down in a transport vehicle, or it will handle up to two side-by-side standard freight containers.
Like on a transportation system for trains where you have two rails, my understanding from looking at some of the material provided to me, there are actually two rails where the magnetic levitation actually takes place, which provides the propulsion. Are each one of these systems the same, where you just change the top portion of it, or is the actual motion that you're using to get from point A to point B different from each one of these?
The motion is the same for each of the transport vehicles.
So then you would have one basic unit that hooks up and just change them from the top down?
Well, what they have, Alex, is all of them have the same motors, and they just have different transport chassis on top of those motors. They all have independent suspension systems on them that mitigate G-forces. The difference is the accommodations, some that people can sit and or stand in, others that will accommodate a vehicle to be driven on that you can go along with or let the vehicle go by itself, and others that accommodate freight, and it's just the makeup of the chassis that sits on those motors and suspension system that is different.
So we're talking lots of stuff going on. You talked about hydrogen production, you talked about conduits, and you talked about people transportation and product transportation, and all this takes place unifying together?
That is correct. It's an integration of several technologies to make the economics work better and the flexibility of things that can be done by via the system.
Just out of curiosity, how did you get started in this project? Can you give us a little bit of a background as to your history and your the fields that you've been involved in that got you going this way?
My history has been one of I've had a lot of hands-on experience. I grew up, my father had his own business, so I was raised with a good work ethic. When I got out of school, I actually went to work in a heavy-duty manufacturing production facility as a supervisor, learned a lot of things there, but went on into marketing. And from a marketing standpoint, I learned a lot about name brand marketing. Then I went and did a stint where I did private label marketing with some of the largest contracts in the country, then went on to do some entrepreneurial runs, which had to do with distribution, distribution in low-tech industries, and then distribution in higher-tech industries. Then I had the opportunity to co-found an internet service provider, which got into the top tier of the nation and did some higher-tech things. How I got involved in this is I'm glad you asked that question. I literally was at a meeting one night, and a gentleman that I knew, I didn't know well, approached me and said, I'm supposed to introduce you to the people at the Hydrogen Superhighway. He said, I don't know why, but that's what I'm supposed to do. So when that happened, I met the founder of the Hydrogen Superhighway Project, Justin Sutton, a great guy, and I quickly saw that this project had a real chance to be a large, impactful, and worthwhile project. And now it's really become ready for prime time as Toyota, Honda, and Hyundai have made their hydrogen vehicle announcements to the marketplace. Others in the vehicle and truck market are ready to do the same. And the military started having us speak at some of their largest sponsored energy conferences. And it just became something that I became very enthralled by, learned as much as I could about it, became the volunteer CEO of the company, and we're working to take this whole project to the next level. But it's something that doesn't happen overnight. But literally, when a guy said, I'm supposed to introduce you, you can call it whatever you want. You can call it the universe. You can call it good karma. I prefer to call it divinity or divine providence.
So a question to you, just like the chicken and the egg, did the hydrogen come first or did the maglev come first?
Well, you know, the hydrogen came first in the universe because it's the most abundant element in the universe. And it's something that our infrastructure every day when this infrastructure is up, when our world turns to the light, this hydrogen will be produced. So the hydrogen is the power source. Maglev is a technology that's not all that new. It's been around, but we did put a new twist on maglev versus the flat maglev models that are being utilized today.
That's what I was going to ask you. Are there any working models of this type of transportation operating at this time, whether here or some other place, and how would they differentiate?
Alex, here's what's out there today. There are several tram systems. For instance, at Disney, Dubai just built a new above-ground metro system that's easing traffic congestion in that really great, beautiful city. There's old above-ground designs like in Chicago. But maglev is in operation by the Germans, by the Japanese, by the Chinese, but it's running at grade on the ground. So what we have done is we've enhanced that. We run above the ground. We have round rails that are slotted linear motors wrap around so they can't come off the rails, and we don't deal with grade crossings. And we also add a suspension system that automatically interacts with G-forces to mitigate them as the system moves. So maglev isn't new technology, but we've put a superior, we believe, twist on it for safety and efficiency reasons. This system has been fully computer vetted by some of the best maglev software in the world that's available, and the efficiency standards on this for the amount of power it takes to run it are just exceptional. The amount of weight that we can raise up and move is exceptional as well.
I would say it'd be difficult to compare with rail at the present time. Is there a number that you can point out to as far as cost efficiency with regard to how much this would cost if a system was operating and functioning properly versus a same distance as far as rail?
So this rail's a little different in that we also include the municipal conduit structure with it. We have the multimodal transportation on it. But from a competitive build-out standpoint, the rail alone with all the conduit clusters included in it, if we're running out in a rural area, is in the range of about $12 million per mile. So it's very competitive to standard road structures and other rail structures.
Have there been any studies done that which point at the fact of how your system, which is enclosed versus the ones where they run on top of a rail, comparatively speaking, which is more efficient?
Well, that's an interesting question. So I'll tell you how I'd like to answer it. We met with a very substantial engineering company that's in charge of one of the high-speed rail initiatives in this country on one of the coasts. And we were invited in to show them our system, and it was with the marketing folks and some engineering folks, and we were just going to do a short luncheon presentation. They had us hang around for about 3 hours, and they told us all the various aspects that this project helps them with that they'd been struggling with. Number one, not being on the ground gives them many advantages because it helps with a lot of eminent domain issues in the acquisition of land. It's less intrusive to the area it's going over because we simply have stanchion poles in the ground. The other thing is we have a short turning radius to utilize our vehicles. We're not a long train that has to pull into a stop, all that slowdown time, that pickup time, where they may have a turning radius of an eighth to a quarter of a mile. We literally have 90 to 120 feet that we can turn these independent vehicles in. The other thing that we were told that was very helpful was that they don't have to worry about prioritizing freight loads versus passenger load. And that's the problem that you get into a lot of congestion points. Freight may get a priority because it's got to move. We can move all at the same time. We just intersperse it along the route. So that's a big thing. And then the other big thing is when we do different expeditions around the world to see what's going on in transportation projects, there's not a consultant group that we've run into that hasn't advised countries to utilize the right-of-way where they're going to put up a transportation system. Do not do it unless you're also bringing municipal services with it. So we've designed the municipal services such as water, sewer, electron, fiber optics, and vapor and liquids into this system. And then to top it all off, hydrogen in a lot of circles is the future fuel of this world. And when we can create hydrogen in large quantities, store it safely, and have a distribution method for it, we don't know of anyone else that's comparing to that. That's why we're in implementation mode at the moment.
Now, are the storage facilities in conjunction with the rail system?
Yeah, the storage facilities are twofold. They are the system, the conduit system within the structure itself, and we also have on an average about every 3 miles we have a subutility station, and that subutility station serves as a storage water tower and a place for us to have the ability to store energy as well. On our system, we can run directly off of – this is a solar cycle to make hydrogen. We can run off the solar directly during the day, or we can store this power as hydrogen to turn generators at any point in time.
So in a way, you wouldn't be stuck with any kind of particular solar system right now, because solar is changing right now as far as efficiency, the methods that are used to produce it.
Alex, that's exactly correct. And the nice thing about the way the infrastructure is designed, almost like computer chips exponentially changed and became smaller and more cost efficient, the solar industry is moving the same way. So we can take off old, put on new as production becomes available in large enough scale as new efficient panels come out. And that's happening in a pretty rapid basis.
You know, that reminds me, you were talking about the differential between having passenger travel and also freight. I had to pick my son coming out of college every once in a while when he came in on the train, and the train seemed to be always late. Could this be completely eliminated by your system?
Well, I don't want to say it wrong, Alex, but it really could be. It just is a better designed mousetrap. The multimodal lets it do that. When we have stops for people to get on and off to ingress and egress the system, we're just in a better position to bring vehicles there that can take him to the next stop or express him all the way across the country as the whole system is built out. The other thing is you don't have these at-grade crossing issues as well. So there's just not the ability to have, you know, a tragic wreck on this system as you do with an at-grade system, which delays things too.
Is that what they had in Europe? I think it was in Germany where that was one of the problems.
Well, there's been some tragedies along the way just from the history of how these older systems and even some of the newer ones are designed. There's just advantages to not cross a road with something that's going faster and faster as well.
Just to kind of differentiate for the listeners, in your opinion and from your expertise, what would be the driving force more so? Is it the transportation system relating to the mag levitation or the hydrogen superhighway, which would provide us energy?
Well, I think it's the energy source of hydrogen. What this does for the United States, it provides an alternative energy grid. And the more of it that's built, the more energy that's available. The maglev on top of it is a convenience, and it also makes the economics work. And we install it from on top of the rail as we continue to put one section down after the next, move forward, put the next section down. So 2 and 2 makes 7 in this case, but I think it's the energy solutions that we provide which are the lead piece.
You know, I can't resist to not ask you this question. Are you getting any kind of – I know most of these kinds of entrepreneurial projects are funded by the public and people that come along with the money. Are you getting any assistance at all from any government entities that might want to help and try to find a better system or, like you say, a better mousetrap?
Well, we're engaging some of those sources right now, Alex, so hopefully we can come back very shortly and have some good news that there might be a little bit of priming the pump impetus from that standpoint. Otherwise, we'll do that through the private marketplace.
I'd like you to put on your hat of a person that prognosticates. Just in your opinion, how far out do you think this is? Are we talking 5 years? Are we talking 20 years for a system to be operating and providing that grouping of product services, meaning transportation and power?
Well, we have a stake in the ground right now, and that is to have our physical prototype demonstration unit built in the heartland of America and to have that commence within the next year. So within the next 1 year to 2 years, we should have a physical demonstration unit to show all of this in person. There's really nothing new here. We had been invited to view the HCAT program in Hawaii, which is the Hawaii Center for Advanced Transportation Technologies, where they're creating hydrogen the same way we propose to do it in large scale. In fact, they've had us come and speak at some of their larger alternative energy conferences to talk about this path to a hydrogen future economy.
Jim, thank you so much for coming on our show today and bringing us up to speed on maglev and the hydrogen superhighway. I would also like to point out that any American is welcome to come on a future episode of America Speaks Out and express their positions or opinions. The FlyPod Network is a neutral forum, so regardless of your point of view or your political affiliation, it makes no difference to us. So if you'd like to come on the show, contact us by email right here at the studio, shout@theflypod.com. Well, that's my show for today. From Studio 7, I'm your host, Alex Parnuk, coming to you free and clear through the New Media Network program feeds of theflypod.com. Until next time, thank you for listening and so long.